And now it's time for On Our Minds. This week, science fiction. We're running a sci-fi flash fiction contest, and Steve Paulson's here to tell us about it.
Now, flash fiction means short, so we're looking for stories that are 500 to 600 words long and based on real science.
3-minute futures, right?
That's right. So the premise is these are stories that are about hard science, so scientifically plausible scenarios for the near future, stories that might deal with the future of energy or computing, robotics.
And so the finalists are going to be chosen by, we're very proud of this, Kim Stanley Robinson. He's the author of the Mars Trilogy. He's a legendary science fiction writer. And then dramatized
by Gates McFadden. You will remember her as Dr. Beverly Crusher on Star Trek's The Next Generation. She also runs the Ensemble Studio Theater in Los Angeles, and they will be adapting these stories for radio. And
the winning stories.
The winning stories.
The three winning stories.
Yes.
Okay, so quick recap. If people want to take part in our flash fiction contest, they go to the website, ttbook.org. All the details are there. And remember, the deadline is coming up soon. It's March 1st. And so, Steve, in case people need a little inspiration, you also brought someone in to talk about science fiction, right?
Yes, Junot Diaz, who is a major figure in literary fiction. He won a Pulitzer Prize for his novel, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao. Well, it turns out he is also a huge fan of science fiction, which I had not realized.
I'm kind of very promiscuous in my love of literatures, of genres. Certainly, there is no question that I love the genres of science fiction, of horror, of fantasy. And when I was writing my first book, Drown, I was simultaneously writing a fantasy novel, which I finished and got contracted. But, you know, in the end, the books have never kind of fallen into the shape I want them to. I think in this way, my kind of literary fiction perfectionism is probably doing me in. There's something about the form that I find really inviting and I think really productive. It allows me to sort of address issues I wouldn't be able to address with realism. So I've been drawn to them.
What kinds of issues can you address in science fiction that you couldn't in the sort of the more, quote, conventional literary novel?
Well, I mean, how many literary novels do you know are about breeding people?
Not that many.
Yeah, well, I'm a product of a couple hundred years of white folks breeding black folks to work. And, I mean, think about it. There's very few black folks in this hemisphere who aren't the product of this sort of sinister experiment of breeding human beings. Now, this is not something that realism is capable really of addressing as well as the genres. Now, you look at realistic novels, the reality of the African diasporic experience is almost entirely absent. And yet you look at science fiction, and science fiction is always breeding people.
So, for instance, the mutant, one of those standard science fiction tropes, I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about here, I suppose.
Sure. But, I mean, it's all over the place. I mean, breeding experiments are in many ways a kind of one of the great standard features in science fiction stories. And the reason the reason that this is a feature is because the hidden history of our reality, you know, what we can't say in polite or realistic discourse, me and you don't like to think, no one likes to think that we are all took part of this really messed up, horrific, inhuman breeding experiment. Now, we can't say that, but popular culture, you know, what we call the genres, often are able to articulate in altered forms the hidden histories of our nations. And so I think that that's, you know, something that is very attractive to me because I'm always interested in the silences. I'm always interested in what the things people and cultures can't say. And I think a lot of those silences are broken in rather altered ways in the genres.
It sounds like you're saying that in some ways, genres like science fiction can take on big ideas that realistic fiction really can't.
I just think that in the end, we need multiple frames, multiple lenses to express or interpret our world. The idea that we could understand our entire reality through realism is absurd. I think that science fiction is as important a way of theorizing about the world.
Well, I want to ask you about a story of yours that was published in The New Yorker, I guess an excerpt from the science fiction novel you're working on, Monstro, which features very large zombies in Haiti. Is that right?
Yeah, it's kind of a book that sort of ground to a halt. I don't know where to take it. Again, it was supposed to be a book about monsters. And more importantly, a book about the island that I was born in, an island which has been the site of all the great important invasions that made and remade and broke our world. When you think about the conquest, as it's euphemistically called, that sort of transforms our world into the new world. It begins on this island. I mean, the Dominican Republic and Haiti are kind of, they are like a top 40 list of invasions. And so in my mind, I couldn't help but think, man, if there's going to be an alien invasion, how much do you bet it's going to happen in the most invaded land in the world?
Well, and then you get, of course, this, you know, practically apocalyptic earthquake in Haiti, which, I don't know, must add extra dimensions to this kind of story that you've been thinking about.
Well, certainly. I mean, my poor island, the apocalypse has visited us so regularly, we can describe it as part of our weather.
Now, you teach a class on apocalyptic literature at MIT, right?
Oh, yeah, man. That's my bag, man. I love the apocalypse. Come on, man. I was 11 when Reagan was elected. There's no greater apocalyptic tutelage, I would argue, in the present era than to have grown up under the shadow of Ronald Reagan. He was my Dr. Manhattan. He was like my looming end of the world. You know, that rhetoric he had of like, we will bomb the Russians into dust, and it doesn't matter if 99% of us get killed, we will win. That was just immensely scary to a young person like me.
Yeah. So who are you? Who are some of your favorite apocalyptic writers?
Oh, man. I have a lot of the classics. You know, I have a lot of the classics. I adore Octavia Butler. I mean, every one of her books has an apocalypse. Samuel R. Delaney's Dahlgren is one of the great phantasmagorical sort of postmodern apocalyptic novels. John Wyndham is the guy who's kind of accused of the cozy apocalypses. He's the guy who wrote The Midwich Cuckoo's Chrysalis, and, you know, another writer who was overwhelmingly obsessed with apocalypses. And so on and so on. There were so many growing up. I mean, that's the thing, that there was an embarrassment of riches.
Well, and then now, I mean, yes, there have always been these stories around, but now we seem to be in this apocalyptic or dystopian moment. I mean, everywhere you look, on TV, movies, YA books, literature, there are these stories. So what's going on now, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think this seems to be another one of those moments where the interest in apocalyptic narrative and the sort of apocalyptic zeitgeist in the culture is reaching a crescendo. You know, ideas and stories and narratives go into circulation. We're at one of these peak moments in apocalypticism. And I think this has a lot to do with our anxieties. This has a lot to do with perhaps the sense that the future is blockaded. I mean, we don't have a kind of a future-minded national project. Most of us are being told that the future is something to be overwhelmingly scared of. The future is possible terrorist attack. The future is not that we're going to save the planet. The future is that the environment is going to degrade and our sort of malign habits are going to do us in. The future is not that we're going to step up as a species and transform the world into a paradise. And I think that it's not an accident that at a time when elites have most overwhelmingly trampled our rights, that the stories that are most in circulation are stories that are so demotivating. They're not stories about us stepping up to the plate and taking power. They're all stories about things are going to get worse, so don't cause any trouble. Don't trigger this. And for elites, these stories must be incredibly valuable because they're not stories that exactly incite people to take risks, to dream big. And, you know, I think that if I was a kind of a powerful person, one of these gilded elites who has so thrived in these climates and environments of inequality, I think that these would be my favorite stories right now because, wow, they keep people scared, they keep them in their place, and they keep them from noticing me robbing the country and the world.
That is a great place to end it. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Juno Diaz won the Pulitzer for his novel The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde. His most recent novel is called This Is How You Lose Her. If you want more information about our sci-fi short story competition, you'll find it on our homepage, ttbook.org.